Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Now football is a pleasant game, played in the sun, played in the rain, and the team that gets me excited, Manchester United,
Manchester, Manchester United,
a bunch of bouncing Busby babes, they deserve to be knighted.
February 1999 was the year. Yes, Manchester United beating Nottingham Forest 8-1 away from home on that occasion. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer coming off the bench to score four on that day. Well, that was United's biggest away win in any competition since, well, now, of course. Manchester United have beaten Tranmere 6-0 today in the FA Cup. What a day for the boys. Bouncing back, of course, after defeats to Liverpool, after defeats to Burnley. It's not looking too shabby now. It was a no-win situation for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, of course. Lose and everyone lambasts Ole yet again. Win and everyone says, well, it was just a League One team. Of course, you are going to win. I'm here, Matt Beadle, with you until 11 p.m. this evening on our Sunday night fan shows. Right now, it's all about United, joined, as ever, by Ben Senior. Hello, Ben.
Evening, mate. How are we?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good result today, wasn't it?
Yeah, very good. 6-0. It's always good to win those games, and you don't want to be on the other end of an upset in the FA Cup. So, yeah, glad we got the win. It was only a League One side, but come on, we've got to celebrate scoring that many goals.
We absolutely do. Just a quick bit of breaking news to give you before we continue with the show, and that is that five people have been confirmed dead, we are led to believe, from a helicopter crash in California. Now, US media outlets are reporting that one of those individuals is basketball star Kobe Bryant. These are reports coming out of US media at the moment, but five people confirmed dead in Los Angeles with a helicopter crash in California, I should say. We're in a helicopter crash. We'll give you more on that as that story develops. But it is the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. If you want to join the debate, it's 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. But Ben, we'll go back to it. 6-0 today. Harry Maguire, Diogo Dalot with his first for the club. Jesse Lingard back on the score sheet. Phil Jones, Anthony Martial and Mason Greenwood. Six separate goal scorers. You couldn't have asked for much more.
You couldn't have done, no. And when Harry Maguire turned inside and pinged it top corner, I thought, yeah, we might have found our answer to the striking options at the minute. But no, it was a very nice performance. I mean, you looked at the state of that pitch and it was a League One side, and you did fear the worst before kickoff. You know they're going to try and get involved in a physical game, and who knows, everyone wanted an upset. So, apart from obviously us United fans. But no, it was nice to see, like you say, the defenders getting on the score sheet, which was a bit of a shock, but nice. I think it's the first time we've actually scored more than six since that 8-2 victory against Arsenal, back when Fergie was there. So it's the first time we've scored six since Fergie, and you can only be happy with it. Mason Greenwood now got 10 goals this season as well, along with Rashford and Martial, so that's good to see, even though he's only really been a bit part and sub player. So, yeah.
Yeah, so many of the good old stats coming out on this one. First time that United have scored five goals in the first half of a match since that 6-1 victory over Arsenal all the way back in February 2001. Something about February on this one, isn't it? Of course, 8-1 against Forest in Feb 1999. That was their biggest away win, their last biggest away win, of course, before today. It's the first time that United have had six different goal scorers in a match, only the second time in their history, first time since 1892. That was a 10-1 win against Wolves. So, all things considered, Ben, this was a potential tricky banana skin. Like I said, if United lose this game, if they draw this game, pretty much Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's job is maybe in jeopardy. We don't know, but the claws would certainly have been out.
Well, the reports came midweek, didn't they, that after the Burnley defeat, that the board were backing Solskjaer. And usually, when you see that reports in the press, it usually means the opposite in a weird way, because when the board have to come out and say, yeah, you've got the manager, you've got the full backing, you know things aren't quite going to plan. But no, he needed a big win today, and he got it. And I think you're looking at this game and thinking, the FA Cup is one of the competitions that we can really get silverware this season. And imagine what silverware would do to this side. I know we've said in previous weeks how depleted the squad is. I know there's a lot of disgruntled fans out there that were saying at the board and the lack of investment and opposing the Glazers. But actually, what this could do for Solskjaer and this side to get a bit of silverware, get a Wembley and get an FA Cup, long may that run continue.
Can we talk about Mason Greenwood? Because it looked like Jesse Lingard wanted to take that penalty. Greenwood was like, no, I'm having it, which shows great maturity from a young lad. And tucked it away. And we've seen this before already. We've spoken about it on this very show, of course. Tucked it away with his right boot. Now, we were speaking about this on the final whistle earlier, and Miles Blunson was saying that, well, no, I reckon he's ambidextrous. You know, he's quite heavily right-footed. I don't think he is. He's very clearly a left-footed player. We've drawn the comparisons between Mason Greenwood and Robin Van Persie and the fact they're very similar in styles. Robin Van Persie, of course, very heavily left-footed. But to step up and take penalties with your right foot, just love to see it.
Everything about him, you just look at him, he just seems to have that elite mentality that all good strikers need. And at the age of 18, it is just mad. And I think out of the 10 goals that said he scored this season, like you were saying, 8 have come on his left foot. So that's, you look to say that's his stronger foot, but then he scored 2 on his right and he takes a pen with his right foot. So it's weird. Like you say, we're almost trademarking that Mason Greenwood finish, weren't we, a couple of weeks ago when he'd turning left foot and slotting it bottom corner. But it's good to see he can use both feet and he looks like the striker that will go on to be a Man United great.
I really want someone to ask him the question because I don't think it's been asked yet. I want to know what the psychology is. Why take penalties with your right foot? Clearly his left foot is his stronger foot. Yes, he scored today. It wasn't the cleanest of strikes, to be fair, to score the penalty. And just a side note, brilliant, absolutely brilliant to see him catch the bog roll that was lobbed onto the pitch. I mean, that is the magic of the FA Cup right there. You don't normally see bog roll in the Premier League, but no, it's the FA Cup. We're at Tranmere, a League One team. Just lob some bog roll on there and he caught it. Brilliant.
It was an unusual celebration, so we say that. But yeah, like you say, the state of the pitch, the way he hit it, it took about 5 bobbles before it went in. So I think he did well just to get an actual strike on the ball. But it is weird to see someone that's predominantly left-footed go and take it with his right foot. But the boy can do nothing wrong at the minute. And I was glad to see him in the lineup today. And I think we're a bit annoyed that he wasn't in the lineup midweek against Burnley, because you're looking at it and thinking this United side is just crying out for someone to finish chances, and Mason Greenwood just does that.
Jesse Lingard as well back on the score sheet. Of course, we know his goal scoring record hasn't been good. Only a second goal in his last 42 games for United in all competitions. We saw him score earlier on this season in the Europa League, but good to see him get on the score sheet with, and we talk about trademark goals, he scored a few of those in his time. Yes, he scored in the 2018 World Cup in that game against Panama, I think it was, wasn't it? Slightly different on that occasion, a much better finish. This one, you know, it was quite a simple finish, really. He tried it again later on in the game, didn't he? Just clipped the outside of the post. But good to see him back among the goals.
Yeah, I love that he gave it the biggins when he scored as well, with the trademark J-lings. Yeah. Even though his clothing brand's gone down the neck, he's still trying to trademark that celebration. Which, to be honest, after he's not scored a goal or assist in a long, long while, you love to see that. But no, everything went through Lingard today. And you're looking at him, and over the past season and a bit, he's just looked like a player that isn't really enjoying his football. And when you think of Lingard, when you think his good times at United and with England as well at major tournaments, the thing about him is he always looks like he loves playing football. And that's what he does. He usually gets when he's at his best, he gets the best out of other players. As strange as that is to say, he's the one that should be linking up playing. He's the one that made like the likes of Rashford and Martial shine, really, seasons gone by. So you're hoping that after today, he sort of just gets that enjoyment back. And what he should be for United going forward is a squad player. Like, no one's asking Jesse Lingard to be a world-class number 10 and be the focal point for Manchester United. That's out of his sort of ability. What you're asking is just for him to be a squad player and come in for games like this, score a goal, get an assist here and there, and hopefully we'll actually see some of that now.
Yeah, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well after the game, just starting to introduce a little bit of a siege mentality operation in his post-match interviews. He did say, you know, you can see everyone wanted us to fail, but it doesn't bother me. I can't be up and down. I'm happy but won't relax. Sounds like song lyrics, doesn't it? I can't be up and down. I'm happy but I won't relax. There are 2 big games coming up.
Yeah, lyrics from Solskjaer. look, like, you look at United and the club gets criticised more than any club in the world. Like, over the past sort of we say over the past 6-7 years what we've won and what we've, in terms of trophy hauls, like clubs like the likes of Tottenham and Arsenal can only dream of what we've won in the past few years. So I think you've got to take it in a bit of context and say, look, United, whoever you are, if you're a player for United or a manager of Manchester United, you're going to get criticised more than anyone in this country, in this league, and possibly in the world of football. So I like the fact that he's trying to bring it, that siege mentality, like you're saying, and try and say, look, like, let's batten down the hatches and let's get this squad playing. Because his job really at the minute is, okay, we know there's issues going on with the board and at the top and the investment, and there's a big questions over that, and I'm sure we'll come to that later. But his job at the minute is to get the best out of the players he's got. So however way he can do that, whether that's just saying, look, like, let's get this squad really tight-knit and go into this FA Cup and see, look, like, we're still not far off top four. That is still achievable. And if we can get a trophy, that'd do absolute wonders for Solskjaer.
Yeah, indeed it would. Just quickly, your thoughts on the game earlier on in the week, Ben, losing 2-0 at home to Burnley. It looked like United were in the ascendancy in the opening exchanges, had a couple of chances. Anthony Martial, who, by the way, hit 200 today, 200th appearance for the club, so a nice milestone for him, scoring to another classically stereotypical, I suppose, finish from Anthony Martial today. Slight deflection, but great to see him on the score sheet as well. But should have scored in that game against Burnley. Goals from Chris Wood and an absolute thunderbolt from Jay Rodriguez too. Were you surprised by that result against Burnley?
I was, in a way, but when you look at United in context this season, it isn't actually too surprising. Tonight I've come on and we're speaking fairly positive because it's a victory and we've scored a lot of goals and we're through to the next round of the cup. But midweek was quite poor. Like, the performance just was really naive from United, and it's almost what sums up what's been bad about United this season is it was naive, it was inconsistent, and it was just Burnley came and they scored. Okay, Jay Rodriguez, great goal. Like, we take that out of the equation. But Burnley came, they played a physical game, they tried to play route one, they scored from a set piece. We were poor in the air. We had numerous chances. I think we had over like 20 shots or something like that. But, and you're looking, a lot of them weren't like clear cut. We were struggling to break them down. And that's why we struggled this season. When it's been teams that have come and sat in front and gone, no, like, this is how we play, we've struggled to break them down. And that's where we've been saying it's been lacking, that bit of creativity in midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. We're with you for another 45 minutes or so. Plenty more coming on. Anthony Hay, assistant sports editor at the Mail Online. We've got Wayne Barton coming on to discuss the 25th anniversary of that Cantona kung fu kick at Crystal Palace. More fallout from today. Plus, we're going to be looking ahead to those games against Man City and Wolves this week. Stick with us. Love Sport. It's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beale, and Ben Senior with you through to 9 p.m. this evening. United with a convincing victory in the fourth round of the FA Cup today, away at Tranmere. A potential banana skin avoided, hitting them for six. Lovely stuff. That is exactly what you want to see. What you maybe don't want to see or hear, I suppose you could say, are chants from United fans throughout that game. We want the Glazers out. We're Man United. We'll sing what we want. You could hear it quite visibly from the TV. It was even louder inside Prenton Park. On the line now to talk about that and much more, we've got Anthony Hay, assistant sports editor at the Mail Online. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, you okay?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for joining us this evening. First and foremost, a good result for United today.
Yeah, it was a good win today, but obviously it doesn't hide the fact that there's still quite a lot of animosity within the club, especially towards the Glazer family and Ed Woodward.
So in terms of the word toxicity, it's what we keep hearing throughout football, really. It's a bit of a buzzword at the moment. You heard it at Arsenal, you're hearing it at West Ham. And for those two examples, Arsenal certainly towards the end of the Arsene Wenger regime, at West Ham now with Gordon Sullivan, certainly not happy there. At Manchester United, personally, I don't want to believe that the atmosphere is toxic as yet. What do you think, Anthony?
Well, we're all being told that the players are happy, that they're loving life under Solskjaer still, even though the results haven't been as what they should be. But obviously, between the fans and the Glazer family, they're still going on with the green and gold campaign. So there's obviously still a lot of toxic energy around the club, and that shouldn't be surrounding a club of Manchester United's stature.
Anthony, we've seen obviously all the green and gold campaign, the chants, and I think there was a flair today as well. But what will it take, from a fan's point of view, what will it take for actually the Glazers to take note of this campaign?
I think they're happy. As long as they're making money, the Glazer family aren't really going to go anywhere, nor is Ed Woodward. Ed Woodward's making the Glazer family a lot of money off the pitch. And on the pitch, I don't think the Glazer family will really take note because they're obviously based in America. They come to the odd game. But as long as they're making money and that United will always make money, then I don't think they're going anywhere like the fans will want them to do.
Anthony, we were having this debate earlier on in the show that Woodward has been labelled something of a financial genius for continuing to keep United stock rising off the pitch. Do you think that he is? Because, yes, figures are going up. That's fair enough. But so should they, right? This is Manchester United. This is a global institution that's lasted for many, many a year. Anybody really in Ed Woodward's role would be doomed to be successful, surely.
Yeah, so Woodward's really good at attracting new deals. So United have so many different commercial partners, whether it's a noodle company or a beer in Mexico. They're always getting new deals. So that's the strength of Woodward. But the fact is that he won't give up the power on the football side of things. Like they said last summer that they were going to get a director of football. They're still not one in situ. So it's like he wants to just take control of the whole club rather than just doing the stuff what he's good at.
So how long can you foresee these chants occurring inside the ground, Anthony? Because this is going on and on and on. It doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon. It's going to take drastic action, really, from the board in order for this to change. Do you foresee Ed Woodward's role changing at all at Manchester United? Or should fans prepare themselves for the same scenario, the same outcome, season after season for the foreseeable?
I think the only way of quieting down those fans is if United start winning trophies again. And I can't see that happening anytime soon. The Glazer family, they love Woodward, so he's not going to go anywhere. So the only way that would happen is if the Glazer family would somehow sell the football club, which I honestly can't see them doing in the foreseeable future. So I think even if the supporters grow louder and louder, the Glazer family, Woodward, they're still going to be tough and they're not really going to give in to all the abuse what they receive.
Anthony, you mentioned that United, it must have been just over 12 months ago now, said that they were looking for a director of football and then since then have seemed to retract that. Why do you think the club sort of let that be known in the wider circles?
I think they put it out there to appease the fans. It was probably a ploy by Woodward to get the supporters on side to make out like he's actually doing something about a necessary fact of what they need to do to the football club. But it seems like the process, he interviewed Rio Ferdinand, Darren Fletcher. I think he spoke to Patrice Evra as well. So he hasn't really gone overseas to try and attract other big names. Or there was talk about Edwin van der Sar, but then he signed a new deal. So it seems to be just going round in circles. I think at one stage they spoke about giving Mike Phelan the job. But obviously he's still an assistant manager under Ollie. So it doesn't look like they're close to appointing one anytime soon.
And with regards to transfers, Anthony, a report has recently come out that United and Sporting Lisbon are apparently miles apart in their valuation of Bruno Fernandes. Negotiations are at a bit of a standstill. What are you hearing on this one? Is this one, I mean, do you think this one's going to get over the line come the end of the month?
Yeah, I think it will happen. I think we had a story on the Mail today that they're still talking, even though there was some reports that they've broken down completely. But they do remain in talk. Sporting need to sell, really. They're in a bit of financial difficulty. And United, obviously, they make a central midfielder who can play in different roles. So I think it will go through. I think it will go through maybe towards deadline day. I think Woodward will panic in the end and just pay out what Sporting want. And then I can also see a striker maybe coming in on loan. There was talk of Slimani and Agallo, which was obviously laughed at social media. But I don't think any of those two will happen. But I can see a striker probably coming on in line.
Phew. Thank goodness for that. That was going to be my next question, Anthony. I was hoping you were going to dispel that ridiculous myth that's gone around social media at the moment. Odion Ighalo and Islam Slimani. Crikey, O'Reilly, do me a favour. In terms of the name that might come in, have you got any ideas who it could potentially be, Anthony?
No, there was obviously talk of Carlos Tevez as well, which it was another laughable report coming in from Italy. But yeah, other than Slimani and Ighalo, there hasn't been many other names linked to us at the moment, but I feel like Woodward or maybe Solskjaer will pull like a rabbit out of the hat in the last minute and find a striker who can come in alone and maybe do a bench role at first and cover for Martial when he's out injured.
Anthony Hay, thank you very much for joining us. That's Anthony Hay, their assistant sports editor at the Mail Online. Rubbishing reports that United are interested in Odion Ighalo and Islam Slimani, Ben.
Oh, it's just a joke, the reports that have come out and the strikers that we're after. And you look at it and you can see why fans, why we are like so annoyed at what's going on at the top of the club. Manchester United, like you said, okay, Ed Woodward is doing well at financially selling the club. I mean, is it that hard to sell Manchester United as a brand to the likes of noodle companies? Like, come on. Like, you don't need to be a financial genius to make money from United. But the point is that United isn't just a brand. It's not Ed Woodward's entertainment brand. It's a football club, and it's not being run in the way as a football club should be. And we've invested, well, spent over £800 million since Fergie left. And you look at the squad now thinking, where is that? Where is that investment? Because it's just not been backed up. And the way the club's been run, there's Ed Woodward, and then I think, is it Matt Judge that's now his assistant? Mm. And he's supposed to go out and get the best value in the transfer market and come back with all this research. And I think it was a thing that came out, a report I saw in the week that said that, oh yeah, we went and identified over 100 right-backs, and then we came back with Aaron Wan-Bissaka. It's like, why are you identifying over 100 right-backs? Like, come on. Like, and the way we keep being held to ransom now, it seems to be with Harry Maguire in the summer, we waited until the very end almost of the transfer window and then paid over the odds for him. And that's going to happen again with Bruno Fernandes, and it'll probably happen again in the summer with the likes of Jack Grealish, or whoever.
Suits and bizheads, I think, is what you call those types of people, mate, who just think that they're involved. Oh, it was great, yeah, they were so involved in football. Yeah, no, it's really cool, and we're going to go out and we negotiate with, like, Harry Maguire and James Maddison, and we're going to come back to our travel with this real bumper deal so we can sip on our champagne. Nonsense. Absolutely ridiculous. All of it. Like you say, I don't want to say these people are clueless about football, but identifying 100-odd right-backs, you could see quite clearly that Aaron Wan-Bissaka was one of the better right-backs in the Premier League last season. Yes, football isn't as simple as that. And you go back to the model at Liverpool at the moment, they didn't just, at the drop of a hat, sign Andrew Robertson. That was a long process of watching him over 10 months or so. Same with Mo Salah as well. It was a calculated decision. But come on, it's just ridiculous. The way that these deals are continually drawn out, and it doesn't help matters whatsoever. I remember the 11-12 season when Fergie went straight into the market. You know, he got rid of Wes Brown, he got rid of John O'Shea. At the time, I thought, crikey, what are you doing? Manchester United favourites. And he went out and instantly got Phil Jones. He instantly got Ashley Young. And yes, that season, United didn't win the league. Of course, it was the Aguero season on the final day. They did go and win it in his final campaign in 2012-13. But it was quick business done like that. It was very rare that United always left things to the last minute. Dimitar Berbatov is one that sticks out for me. And I hated that deal when it was done because, fleeced by Daniel Levy at the time, it was Saha, wasn't it, that went in the opposite direction. And I just don't like those deals being done, because if you really want a player, you go and get it done. We are, what, 6 days away, 5 days away now until the end of the window. Like Anthony said there, it smacks of a Woodward panic on the final day, going, right, okay, yeah, we'll give you the money that you want. It's just ridiculous. We're going through the motions when you ultimately know what the end product's going to be.
It's just sheer desperation. And it shouldn't be coming to this for a club like Manchester United. And okay, you can accept that the odd player you might have to pay over the odds for. Do you know what? If it was just the one-off case that we had to pay more of Harry Maguire and we needed a centre-half, then fair enough. But it seems to be every window we're absolutely desperate for a striker or a centre-mid or a centre-half. And then we go to a club, and of course, like, they're not stupid. They're going to come back and go, no, we know we want. Sporting are going to be there. Their fans are going to be on the case because they keep selling their best players. And they're saying, you're Manchester United. You want Bruno Fernandes? Well, we're not accepting anything less than 70, 80 million for him because we know you want him and need him. So they're not stupid. But why are United getting held to ransom? And then you think it's not just football clubs, agents, Mino Raiola. How many times has Mino Raiola's name been mentioned to Manchester United in the past 3, 4, 5 years? And now he's coming out, he seems to be every week, he seems to be doing more interviews than anyone at the minute about Pogba. Oh, Pogba's future, yeah, his mentality, United's mentality don't quite match up. And you know what, I admire Solskjaer in a way that he has got rid of a bit of dead wood in this squad. Like, you've seen players like, whether they should or shouldn't have gone, he's got Lukaku out, Sanchez has gone out on loan, and he has tried to get players out that don't fit into whatever system he's trying to implement, but there's not been players coming in. You can't, like, ship out a 20 plus goal striker a season, get no one in, and then in January think, oh, hang on, we need a striker, let's go and get whoever we can get on loan. Ah, it's just desperation to the extent of, like.
So where do you stand on the digging of the heels digging in of the heels of Ed Woodward and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to a certain extent. One, for the model of wanting to sign young English talent. Two, for getting them at the right value. Because I've seen a lot of ex-pros, a lot of pundits come out this week and just say, do you know what? Pay the money. If it costs you $150 million to go out and get James Maddison, go and pay Leicester that. If it costs you, you know, $80-odd million to go and get Kalidou Koulibaly, go and pay that. If it costs you another $100 million to go and get Jack Grealish, go and pay it. You got the money, just go and pay it. Erling Haaland, another player who we've seen score 5-2 for Borussia Dortmund, breaking all records in the process. Go and pay it. Now, I don't really agree with that because, one, you've got FFP, that's another issue altogether. Two, you are continuing to throw money. What was the squad against Burnley? 600 odd million that squad took to assemble. And all the comparisons come around to the fact that it was, what, 200-300 million more than Liverpool's current starting 11. So if you just continue to throw money at the problem, one, you're building a bit more pressure upon yourselves, because then next season, what is it? Oh, this squad cost £900 million to assemble and you still can't make the top four. So where do you stand on United, you know, just chucking the checkbook at the problem?
Well, you mentioned the squad against Burnley, and that lineup had players in it that were signed from five different managers at Manchester United. And that just says everything. Like, every window, it shouldn't come down to this. It shouldn't come down to, oh, let's just go and spend £100 million on this player because we desperately need him. Like, when you're identifying transfer targets and you're building a squad, it should be that you're building a squad for years. And we keep deciding, like, the reason why this club has failed at the minute is because Ed Woodward has seen the process of after Fergie, and we've gone through manager to manager and gone through different philosophy to different philosophy. So now he's suddenly trying to backtrack and saying, oh, no, actually, we want to bring in young players and start for the future. But you're trying to undo about 4 years of bad decisions. So it just stinks of desperation. And I accept that we are Manchester United. We can pay money to get big players in, but we can't be held to ransom on every single club in every single transfer window.
No, absolutely not. I guess the bigger question is as to whether Ed Woodward does see Manchester United as a football product or purely as an entertainment product. You'd be inclined to think it is the latter. This is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. We're going to be talking King Cantona next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beale and Ben Senior with you through to 9pm this evening. It is our Sunday Fan Show special. Sheffield United coming up at 9pm. We're going to be talking all things Swansea at 9:30. Also, we have Norwich and Sunderland 2 coming up. Just some breaking news coming out of the US at the moment is that Kobe Bryant, the basketball legend, has died in a helicopter crash. There were reports that a helicopter went down in California and five people are reported to have died. This is from the LA County Sheriff's Department in the US, that five people have died in the helicopter crash this Sunday morning. No survivors have been confirmed from that state. And one of those is reported to be five-time NBA champion Kobe Bryant. He was 41 years old. He played his entire 20-year career with the LA Lakers, of course, retiring just a few short years ago in 2016. Tragic news this, Ben.
It is, and obviously thoughts with all his family and friends, but he's one of those people that I look at and think, I don't really follow basketball, or very loosely anyway, but you look at Kobe Bryant and he's someone that just transcends basketball and sport across the world. And people that don't necessarily know who he played for, don't necessarily know a lot about basketball or American sport, will know about Kobe Bryant. And I think it's just such a shame.
Yeah, hugely sad news. We'll be giving you more updates, reports on the situation that Kobe Bryant, basketball legend, has been reported as dead in a helicopter crash this Sunday morning in California. This is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Right now, we're going to move on and speak to Wayne Barton. He has joined us on the line, Manchester United historian. Hello, Wayne.
Evening, gents. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much. Now, 25 years ago, a certain King Eric decided to leap into the crowd at Selhurst Park. Manchester United won, or Crystal Palace won, Manchester United won. He was banned. He went, seagulls followed trawlers, and the rest is history.
Yeah. You were just speaking about the terrible news with Kobe there, and Cantona similarly was one of those players, one of those sportsmen who transcended the sport that he was in. And really, that moment at Selhurst Park was the moment which he introduced himself to the world, really. He took football from the back pages to the front pages. And I mean, everyone remembers how they had the news on that. It was one of those seminal moments in football, wasn't it? In life, really. If you were a United fan, if you were a football fan, you remember what you were doing or how you found out about Cantona jumping into the crowd at Selhurst Park. It was one of those surreal things, which even now looking back, because it hasn't happened since and it hadn't happened before in such an high-profile way anyway. I know that people have reported incidents of players and fans interacting in a violent way before, but never in that kind of way. And yeah, it was really one of those iconic moments.
It was certainly iconic at the time. And of course, Eric was being hauled off the pitch by poor Norman Davies, the kit man at the time, who desperately tried to pull him back from not leaping into the crowd and attacking Matthew Sims, a Crystal Palace fan. But it did come as a result of an altercation between him and Richard Shaw. Now, you've spoken to Richard Shaw about this, haven't you?
Yeah, I was at Amos too. I've recently written a book on Eric, which is due to be published in April. And I tracked down Richard to talk about Eric, basically, and he hasn't talked about that very often over the years. And you know, the first thing I asked him was about, you know, the treatment which he gave Cantona on the night, and he you know, it's very interesting the perspective that certain people look they look on it on, you know, because they get a certain reputation. Like John Monker, for example, everyone remembers. He got his chest in the way of Eric Stokes one time when he was playing for Swindon. And everyone has built up Richard Shaw's role in this as this kind of violent sub-defender. And he really wasn't. He was a decent defender, but in a pretty good Palace side at the time. And he was just giving Cantona a rough game, a tough game, a fair game as well. And the funny thing is that Richard Shaw, actually, big fan of Eric Cantona. And he came out of it saying, effectively, that he didn't think he'd done anything untoward with Eric, nothing to sort of warrant the reaction that he got. And he always thought that it was one of those things that, you know, just one of those things. Cantona had a flashpoint. I mentioned John Monker. He'd also had a flashpoint with the Galatasaray, that incident. And then there was also John Poulston, I think, for Norwich as well. The red card at Arsenal, which was debated. So there were a few flashpoints he had in the previous year. And Shaw just thought, well, we'll try and wind him up a little bit. It wasn't anything that you don't see in every single game of football. Of course, Eric Cantona is not a player that you find in every single game of football. And Cantona sort of lashed out at him, stood on his foot. Richard Shaw fell down. He didn't even watch what was happening. You know, many of the sort of key figures of the time can remember what they were watching, but not very many of them were watching Cantona on the sidelines. Even Ferguson was trying to reshuffle his side. So Richard Shaw was sort of tying his shoelaces and then didn't really realise what had happened until afterwards. And he told me, these are his words, his actual words, and I'll quote him verbatim. He said, "It was a loss for football. We were denied watching a wonderful talent play week in, week out. I enjoyed playing against players like that, but I also enjoyed watching them." He was actually gutted that Cantona got suspended, believe it or not. it's crazy, but you know, Richard Shaw could not have been more complimentary about Eric Cantona.
Incredible, that, isn't it? The fact that, you know, he was one of the main subjects in that entire situation, and he kind of was gutted that Cantona got the ban. I mean, it's just an incredible thing. And I wanted to touch on something here, Wayne, in the sense that this particular incident has kind of been glamorised over the years, hasn't it? And, you know, it's something as United fans are quite proud of with King Eric. And you said there that, you know, it was a seminal moment in United history for him, and it kind of put him on the global stage. You just kind of wonder if that kind of thing happened in today's game, whether it would be glamorised in 25 years or so.
Yeah, I think the world's changed quite a lot. And it is interesting. If you talk to any of sort of Eric's peers at the time, even Robbie Fowler, of all people, in his autobiography said something like, "Good on Eric for doing what he did." So there was a lot of support for him from other professionals. And it was sort of like this idea that he was heading to this kind of thing. It's like, almost like it was an inevitable climax of the terrorist and the footballer. And I don't think it was ever quite that because it was so extraordinary. Absolutely, you are so right. If it happened today, the ban would be incredible. I mean, you'd be talking probably about a ban from the game rather than just a suspension, or at least sort of like a from that association, you know, so they would have to go and play in a different country, as Eric, you know, very nearly had to. And, you know, quite rightly so in a way, because, I mean, we're talking about it, it is sort of, yeah, like you said, it's glamorised. We look back at it with a certain affection for United fans because it made us love Eric that little bit more for some strange reason, even though it effectively cost us the title and the double that season as well. So, yeah, it's a strange one. But Cantona was a strange one in that kind of role as well, because, I mean, if it had been any other player, if it had been any of the current crop, for example, doing that, I don't think that the support would be as great for them as it was for Eric. And maybe that's to do partly with his personality and partly to do with the fact that he transformed the club.
Wayne, you mentioned that we've never really seen anything like that in the game by any player. But because it was Cantona, can you just describe how he actually came back from that?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing because he, like you said, because it was so symbolic and so unprecedented, he could not imagine anyone coming back from it. And he was out for 8 months. He was training. He obviously faced criminal charges for it, and he went through all that retribution through the law. And then he was on his way back. He was training through pre-season and everything like that. Inter Milan were always linked with a move for him. And there was a moment where the club were trying to arrange him to have some pre-season training, sort of friendly games. He wasn't allowed to play any arranged games. And through that period, the FA got wind of it and they sort of threatened to effectively prolong Cantona's suspension. Or they were going to look at it anyway and they were sort of coming down heavy-handed with it. So Cantona fled to France, and we've actually talked about this in one of the forthcoming episodes of Barkley and Barton, so I don't want to give too much of the game away with that, but Eric did eventually stay at United against all odds through a magnificent piece of intervention from Ferguson. And when he did come back, it was incredible the impact that he did have afterwards, because he changed as a player. He was placid. He was a peacemaker, which was just extraordinary. And then, obviously, the impact what he had on the title and the FA Cup that season. I would be hard-pushed if you could find any single player who had such a definitive impact on the way that a season went as Cantona did in that season. It was an incredible comeback and a testament to his ability and his temperament as well. And to be fair, after that, he was pretty much commended by everyone for the way that he did it.
He was indeed. Wayne Barton, thank you very much for joining us there. That was Wayne Barton, United historian, just commenting on the 25th anniversary. Of course, it was yesterday that Eric Cantona leapt into the crowd at Selhurst Park. Interesting that, really, because it has been glamorised, hasn't it? And the world has changed, and you do wonder whether that happened today, what the action would be. Probably more severe than the 10-month-odd ban that Cantona received way back when in 1995. You can catch more on that story from Wayne Barton in his book, Eric Cantona, Portrait of the Artist Who Changed English Football. Great book. Get over to Amazon. That will be available in early April. Right, this is the Manchester United Fan Show. We've got about 12 minutes to go. We've got Anthony Wootton on after the break as well, US sports specialist. He's going to be talking to us about the tragic news today that has been reported out of the US that NBA basketball star Kobe Bryant has passed away in a helicopter crash. Anthony Wootton on after the break.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
This is the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. We are going to interrupt the show this evening because there has been breaking news out of the US today that US basketball legend Kobe Bryant has been killed in a helicopter crash in the city of Calabasas in California. Now, the city of Calabasas Twitter account has now released an official statement via the FAA, which is the Federal Aviation Administration, and they've said that it is with great great sadness that we learn of the death of Kobe Bryant and four others in a helicopter crash in Calabasas. The aircraft went down in a remote field off Las Virginias around 10 a.m. this morning. Nobody on the ground was hurt. The FAA, that is the Federal Aviation Administration, and the NTSB, that is the National Transportation Safety Board, are investigating. But we are aware now that one of the people on board that helicopter was US basketball legend Kobe Bryant, aged just 41. Of course, he spent his entire 20-year career in the NBA with LA Lakers. This is absolutely tragic news coming out of the US today. On the line now, we have US sports journalist and host of the US Sports Show on Love Sport, Anthony Wootton, on the line. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, good evening.
I mean, where do we start with this, Anthony? You never expect, of course, to hear news like this. And it's just tragic, isn't it?
Absolutely tragic. I mean, first and foremost, you know, thoughts are with his wife, well, now widow Vanessa, their four daughters. He said they're aged just 41. And at the age of 41, a true sporting icon, a true sporting hero, an icon for one of the most storied and successful sports teams in all the world. And for somebody to dominate the sport like he did, he got drafted straight out of high school in 1996 and played with the Lakers for 20 years. This is a guy who was a kid coming out of high school from Pennsylvania. So he had to travel across the country. Can you imagine that? Coming out of high school and then going to a huge, huge franchise like the LA Lakers, a franchise that had greats such as Magic Johnson playing for them. And, you know, you've got such big shoes to fill, and he did. I mean, historic is what you label with Kobe Bryant, 5 times NBA champion, 2 times NBA Finals MVP, NBA MVP, 18 times All-Star. He's the 4th highest all-time scorer in the NBA. He was 3rd until last night when another icon with the Lakers, LeBron James, surpassed him just last night. And I was reading this morning and retweeting the tweet from Kobe Bryant last night congratulating LeBron James for overtaking him. LeBron James had Mamba, which was the nickname for Kobe Bryant, inked on his trainers last night before he was going out there onto the court to break Kobe Bryant's record. And it's just, it's tragic. It's unbelievable. So the NBA stars and sports stars all over the world, even celebrities, film stars are all over Twitter, as you can imagine right now, sending out their condolences. One of the big stars, he's only 20 years old, and Kobe Bryant would be able to associate with him, being such a young star, a young talent. Luka Doncic tweeted out and literally said, "Please don't be true. I'm shaking." It looks like the NBA are canceling, postponing their games this evening. There's a whole slate of games to take place this evening, and quite rightly, players are just too shocked. I don't know how you could play a basketball game tonight when a true, true great, not just in basketball, but a sporting icon, an icon, just a global icon, has died in such tragic circumstances.
Yeah, global icon is certainly the term that you have to use. And Ben, you yourself, you know, you're a relatively young lad, mid-20s odd, coming through your career, your career as a journo, your career as a sports fan, your life as a sports fan, and seeing this happen, seeing this guy come through the ranks as that global icon.
You mentioned global and sporting icons, and I think that's important because certain players you see in certain sports just really transcend their sport across the world and really mean a lot to different people. And we all grow up, and a lot of us grow up working in this sort of industry. We grow up following sport, possibly wanting to play sport, and trying to realise your dream in sport. And I think he's one of those players that you mentioned all the accolades he's won there, and reached his dream and reached the pinnacle that he could in his sport, but also the influence that he would have had on sport as a global scale and across people just around the world, just to inspire them. Because you see people around the world that may not have an interest in football, but they might own an LA Lakers Kobe Bryant jersey, or they'll know of the LA Lakers, or they'll know of Kobe Bryant, and they'll have heard his name. They might have never picked up a basketball in their life, but it just shows that the influence that man had, and and how tragic it is that he's gone in such sad circumstances.
Anthony, I just want to ask you the legacy now of Kobe Bryant. What will that be? Like Ben said there, you've mentioned all the accolades that he won. 33,581 points, third on the all-time list of NBA point scorers. What's the legacy now that Kobe Bryant has left?
Well, the legacy of the LA Lakers, he wore two different numbers of the Lakers, and they retired both those numbers. Where at the NBA and where they move on from here, I think there will be... We've got the All-Star game in a couple of weeks' time in Chicago. Maybe there's some kind of connection there. Maybe the MVP award, because he won the All-Star MVP four times in his career. Maybe there's a nod there to Kobe Bryant, and maybe the MVP award is named the Kobe Bryant Award. I don't know, but he will be recognized. He will not be forgotten by the NBA at all. And it's just tragic. It just transcends all sports, like you were saying there, Ben, about how if you're a football fan, you know of Kobe Bryant. You know, fans all around the world, he won Olympic gold medals in Beijing. He won an Olympic gold medal here in London in 2012. So make no mistakes, he will be recognized and he will be remembered by the NBA and by the LA Lakers.
And for you yourself, Anthony, we know that you cover all kinds of US sport, NBA being one of those. One of your memories, your greatest memory, the thing that really sticks out for you when you think Kobe Bryant, what would that be?
Oh, it'll be, first of all, his smile, but his agility on the court. And it just takes me back to that formidable partnership that he had with Shaquille O'Neal. I associate Kobe Bryant playing alongside Shaq, with that amazing LA Lakers team. I grew up over stateside in Canada, in North America, during the 80s, and it was the time of Magic Johnson. He had Larry Bird with the Celtics, but the Lakers, they just had something about them, and Magic had it, and then in came Kobe as part of that team, and he is the face. Different generations will have a face associated, connected with the Lakers, and he is the face of the LA Lakers for me.
Anthony, thank you very much for coming on this evening. Really, really do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That was Anthony Wooten there, US sports journalist and host of the US Sports Show here on Love Sport, just giving us his reaction to the tragic news that US basketball legend Kobe Bryant has sadly passed away today, killed in a helicopter crash in the city of Calabasas in California. Five people are reported to have gone down in the crash. That was reported by the LA County Sheriff's Department early on Sunday morning in the city of Calabasas in California. The reports are that nobody on the ground was hurt, but the news has been confirmed that five did pass away in that crash, and one of those five was US basketball legend Kobe Bryant. Ben, I mean, you just heard there from Anthony. It's just incredibly tragic news, but the legacy, you know, if you can take any positive from any kind of news that comes out like this, is that his legend will live on.
That's very true, and Anthony was saying how he transcends the sport, and his smile and his jersey will always be iconic, and that's the important thing now. Obviously, it's such tragic circumstances in the immediate aftermath, but going forward, that legacy will live on, because he wasn't just a basketball player. He gave so much to the sport and so much to the world in terms of inspiring people, and hopefully that will then go on and lead a legacy for people to follow in his footsteps.
Yes, absolutely. You are listening to Love Sport. We've got plenty more coming up over the course of the next few hours, and we'll be bringing you more reaction from that news that sadly Kobe Bryant has passed away in a helicopter crash in California this morning.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.